I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to a new episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk about the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have part two of our interview with Jerry Branum, one of our favorite guests, where we are talking about the year 1970, reviewing competitions that go back 50, 40, and 30 years. So Jerry and I talked about 1970 on last week's show, and on this week's show, we continue that discussion. So last week, we talked about the AAU Mr. America, which was won by Chris Dickerson, and you also had an 18-year-old Casey Viator in that contest who took third place that year, and then he won it the next year, and Casey was the youngest Mr. America winner ever. And we also talked about the 1970 AAU Mr. World, where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time. So this week, as I said, we're going to talk about the NABBA Mr. Universe in 1970, where Arnold won the pro division over Reg Park and Dave Draper. And Frank Zane won his first NABBA Universe in the amateur division. And then we're going to talk about the historic 1970 Mr. Olympia, where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time at the Olympia. And Arnold became the new Mr. Olympia, and he was now the king of bodybuilding. And Sergio, of course, was a three-time Mr. Olympia, and then Sergio lost that year. So 1970 was the year where Arnold Schwarzenegger really established himself as the king of bodybuilding. So that was 50 years ago this year, if you can believe it. All right. Then at the end of our interview with Jerry, I am going to read an article which was sent to us by our friend Pat Comer, who has a bunch of great old magazines, even older than ones I've got. And he sent me an article about Chris Dickerson winning the 1970 Mr. America from Iron Man magazine. I think this was from the September 1970 issue of Iron Man magazine, where Casey was on the cover at 18 years old and says, Casey Viator, teenage Mr. America. So it's got two big pictures of Chris Dickerson and Ken Waller from this article. So I'm going to read that at the end of our interview with Jerry Branum. All right, before we get to that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So what else is going on? We got the winners of the John Hansen Fall Fitness Challenge, which ended last Monday on the 21st of December. So I will announce those guys right now. The first place winner was Nick Rizzitello, and Nick made incredible progress. If you go to my website, johnhansenfitness.com, you'll be able to see these guys. You'll be able to see their pictures and hear their stories. And Nick made some incredible progress. He lost, I think, about 5 inches off his waist, but you won't even believe the before and after pictures. And an interesting story about Nick was he was a former police officer, and he got into a really bad car crash. And after that car crash, he was suffering from PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and it actually caused him to quit his job. And then he kind of got out of shape and gained some weight. So he said doing this challenge really helped him get over the PTSD because he was more focused on his workouts, on his diet, and he was working really hard. I don't know what he does for a living now, but he was working a full-time job, and his wife was really helping him out, and she would cook all his meals for him, and he would come home after work and drop off his thermos and all his food and everything, and then pick up his other meals and go to another job for another 4 hours. So really working hard, and his son was helping him out, spotting him. And he didn't really tell anybody except his wife about the challenge that he was doing. So he was overjoyed to win. So Nick will be getting about $200 in free supplements from Old School Labs. And he's also going to get all of my books and DVDs, which is Bodybuilding Heroes and Legends, Volume 1, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, and the MP6 Workout. And he'll get both of my DVDs, which was the Real Muscle DVDs, and also Bodybuilding Seminar and Competitions. So he will get both of those as well. So congratulations, Nick. Amazing progress. In second place was Mario Uriel. And Mario is in his late 50s, and he had quite a few accidents. He fell outside. I think it was raining or something, and he fell, and he tried to stop his fall, and he ended up really messing up his shoulder. And it took about 2 years to rehab that, so he wasn't able to work out at all. And then after that was finally getting better, and he was starting to go back into working out. I think he had another fall, and he messed up his elbow. He had some really bad injuries. So when I designed Mario's workout, I had to give him some light weights, but we were able to find a way to increase the intensity by doing supersets and things like that. He was really only able to use dumbbells. But with the diet he was following, which I wrote up for him, along with the workouts, he made incredible progress. And actually, he had to have another kind of medical procedure halfway through the fitness challenge. So he wasn't even able to finish it. But I had to put him in second place because the progress he made was unbelievable. He lost like 7 inches off his waist in like 7 weeks. So it was really incredible. So when you see Mario's pictures on my johnhansonfitness.com, you will be amazed. So congratulations to Mario. I hope he's doing well. I hope he's following up with the workouts. And then my old friend Mike Euler from Chicago area, he took third place. So Mike was actually a former training partner of mine. I think when I won the Natural Olympia contest in 98, I think Mike was training with me back then in Westmont, Illinois. So Mike is still working out, but he let himself go and got a little heavy. So he made some great progress too. And in fact, I think Mike lost like 27 pounds in 12 weeks. So he lost the greatest amount of weight out of all the competitors. So congratulations to all those guys, Nick, Mario, and Mike, for taking first, second, and third place in the John Hansen Fall Fitness Challenge. But we got our second annual John Hansen Fitness Challenge, which is coming up in January. And this is going to be a big one, guys. So I'm going to offer some more prizes. We're going to have free supplements again from Old School Labs, plus all my books and DVDs, and a couple other surprises. So it's going to be really, really good. So that will start in 3 weeks on January 11th. So if you go to johnhansonfitness.com and you want to register, you can register there. The sooner you do it, the better. And that will start on January 11th, and it'll go all the way to April 5th. So we had a really good John Hansen Fitness Challenge last year, and I think this one's going to be even bigger. So check that out. Those are working out really good. Some of the success stories are really amazing. And I'm glad these people are so motivated and they're making such great changes. And I'm sure it's changing their life, because once they do it once, you can always get in shape again once you figure out how to do it. And we're even going to have, I think I'm even going to create a Facebook group for anybody who goes in any of my challenges. So we did 3 last year. So anybody who goes in the fitness challenges, I'm going to create a private Facebook group. So keep that in mind, guys, if you want to do that. And then we'll be able to follow up with you continuously, even after the fitness challenge is over. So I thought about doing that last week. So I'm going to start that pretty soon. All right. Speaking of working out, I go back to the gym tomorrow on Monday. So I am so psyched. I've been off for 6 weeks since my hernia surgery. And that 6 weeks went by really, really fast. And it is now time to get back to the gym. So I know I'm going to be super sore. So my plan is I'm just going to start out really light. I think I'll only bench press like 150 pounds, something like that. And I'm just going to go up 20 pounds on all the big lifts every week. So after 4 weeks, I should be close to my strength being back to what it was when I had stopped training before my surgery. So that's the plan. I'll just go easy for 4 weeks. And then I think I'll start my power cycle on my MP6 workout. I think I'll start that in 4 weeks, so probably in late January, I'll be starting that, and then get back into the power cycle for 6 weeks, and then the mass cycle for 6 weeks, and I'll be back to normal. And hopefully this time the hernia will hold, and I won't have to go through this stuff again. All right, what else we got? Also, I'm thinking about doing another seminar now that this COVID thing is, I don't know, hopefully calming down a little bit. I'm looking at February in Tampa, Florida. So I will keep you guys abreast of that and let you know any progress we make on that. But it might be a weekend seminar again, maybe a Saturday, Sunday thing. I'm putting together the outline now. I'm working with somebody on how to get it together. So I think it's going to be really, really good. We were trying to do this last year, of course, and I think it was going to be in March last year, but we had to cancel because that's when the COVID thing hit and nobody wanted to travel and nobody wanted to congregate with other people. So we're going to try it again, and hopefully we can get a limited amount of people and get that together. So if you guys are interested in that, just let me know and I'll put you on the list. All right. I did get a really good email from my friend Wayne Galash from Australia. I wanted to read it because I thought it was really nice. All right. Wayne said, "Hey, John, I hope you had a pleasant Christmas day and all the best for 2021. I gather you've dodged COVID so far." He said, "You did a tremendous job at the Olympia. When you did those first interviews with me at the Olympia about 10 years ago, who would have thought it might lead to your present role? I'm sure they will have you back next year. I watched it all on pay-per-view, Wayne." And I wrote him back. I said, "Thank you very much, Wayne. I was waiting to hear some feedback on my interviews. I haven't heard anything yet, so I appreciate the positive reviews. I hope you had a Merry Christmas." And then Wayne wrote me back and he said, "Thanks. You did a good job for a number of reasons. You must have been a bit daunted with the worldwide pay-per-view audience watching, but it did not show. You kept your questions brief and concise and let the bodybuilders do the talking. You were polite and non-aggressive, not like some interviewers who want to be the star. You used your background knowledge at times, but did not flaunt it. You did not get into the controversy of the worst decision of the Olympia, namely Shanique Grant not winning the women's physique. It was a shocker. And could the judges have been saying Shanique was too big for this class? She was way too small for the Miss Olympia, but easily should have won her class. I did not recall if you got into the subject of her defeat with Shanique or anyone else. Did you? Who was the camera person and the camera crew shooting with you? And was it a bodybuilding person similar to me? Did you have a director and an earpiece giving you any tips or instructions? It was heartbreaking for me not to be there. That's why I watched every bit of it on pay-per-view. I said, we had a lonely Christmas day on our own, just the two of us, and only an email from my three kids, not even a phone call. They spent the day with their mother. Yesterday on Boxing Day, we had a barbecue with my daughter and granddaughter. I guess you were also alone on Christmas Day. Stay well and Happy New Year, Wayne." Yeah, so thank you, Wayne, for that positive review of my interviews on the pay-per-view Olympia, which was already last weekend, already a week went by. Yeah, I thought for sure Shanique Grant should have won the women's physique. I think most people do too. She just has incredible genetics, unbelievable. So I can't see how she lost. I think they said the other girl was a little harder, but I don't know. I don't think most people agreed with that decision. The rest of the contest I thought was pretty much right on, though. I thought they made some great decisions on all the other classes. And they had a lot of new winners. I think there was only like out of seven classes, I think the women have four, the men have three. I think there was only two return winners. All the other ones were new winners. So there's a lot of shocking upsets at the Olympia this year. I did have a director, but they hired an outside crew and it wasn't a bodybuilder like Wayne Galash. It was somebody I don't think familiar with the bodybuilding world, but he was really good. His name was Nico. We had a good time working together and I didn't have an earpiece. They were just giving me hand signals and stuff on when to start. Anyways, hopefully Wayne will be able to come back next year to the Olympia. He's there every single year. So I know this was really tough for him to miss it. And he had no choice. They could not travel out of Australia from the COVID thing. So he couldn't do anything. All right. So that is it for our opening. Here is our interview, part two of our interview with Jerry Branham, where we continue talking about the year 1970 in bodybuilding. Here we go.
Let's talk about the NABLE Mr. Universe, which at the time was probably, well, I guess the Mr. Olympia and that one were probably getting close. But that had the reputation, started in 1950, it was like that was the one where all the champions went to. So I think 1970 was probably one of the best years for the NABLE Universe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the way it worked was that for many years, anyone who won the AU Mr. America, you know, got a free ticket, an invitation to go to the NABLE Universe. I mean, that's why most of them competed.
Yeah.
What you're saying is true. The NABLE Mr. Universe, back then, people don't remember, weren't old enough, was very prestigious. It was, you know, everybody knew who the IPU Miss Universe was back then.
Yeah.
I know that they still hold it somewhere, but honestly, if you said to me, if you put a gun to my head and said, name the last five NABLE universes, I'd say, pull the trigger because I have no idea.
I wouldn't know the last 10.
I mean, seriously, because first of all, I don't look at magazines anymore. the ones that exist, I haven't looked at it. I don't remember the last time I opened a bodybuilding magazine. Second thing is, I don't even see pictures of it online.
Yeah, I don't think it's covered at all, really.
Yeah, I mean, where's the coverage? There's no coverage. Nobody knows about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how good the guys are, but like you said, the reason it had that reputation was some of the greatest bodybuilders. Bill Pearl, Steve Rees, Reg Park, John Grimmick. I mean, these were the greats. They won the NABBA Universe.
Yeah.
You don't have that kind of prestige. I don't want to put anyone down, but the guys competing today, I think, are more or less like local British bodybuilders.
Yeah.
You know, they might be great. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't seen them. But they don't have the kind of reputation and name that the guys had years ago who competed in that. So like Arnold, Frank, right. Chris, Boric, Coe. You could go on and on. The greatest bodybuilders of the day competed in the NABBA Universe. The 70 was a really good show.
Yes.
Wasn't that the year that Christine Zane also won the Miss Bikini?
Yeah, yes, Miss Universe or whatever they called it, yeah.
Yeah, because they have a famous shot of Frank won the amateur, you know, Arnold won the pro, and she won this, I don't know what they call it, Miss Bikini.
Yeah.
And they're both holding her up.
Holding her up, yeah.
There's a famous photo there, you know.
Right.
I remember there was one woman who won, I can't remember her name, one of them, she had such a shapely body. I was very attracted to her. You know, she was a British woman. She won right about a year or two later.
Okay.
And Arnold knew her. And I asked Arnold about her. I said, Arnold, that girl's, my God, she's gorgeous. I mean, yeah. She looks, what a body she has that curves, I said. So Arnold went into a whole thing about a half hour telling me of the great sex he had with her. Described everything he did with her, and I started to get so freaking jealous. I was like, damn it, Arnold! You know.
Yeah, he had to rub it in for sure. Huh?
I'm sure it was true, you know, because I just saw many photos of her standing with her. And I'm sure, knowing how Arnold was, I'm sure he came on to her.
Oh, you know? yeah, for sure.
She was.
Let's talk about that show in the short class in the amateur. Chris Dickerson, who was Mr. America, went over, like you said, Jerry. All the Mr. Americas would go over, so he beat out Franco, and that was a little controversial. You know, looking at the pictures, I could see why Franco was mad about that because he was much more muscular, much more ripped than Chris. Right. But Chris had more of the symmetry, the shape. You know what they're looking for.
Again, you can explain that. I agree with you. Franco was much thicker,
yeah,
much bigger back, you know, more separation. Similarly to Chris, they both had kind of a weak arm development, but Chris had that complete package of symmetry and proportion. See, the problem with Franco all through his career was symmetry. His legs never really matched his upper body. In fact, Artie Zeller, the famous physique photographer, he called Franco Mr. Potato Head because, in other words, Because Franco had all the muscle in the upper body. And this is even before he had the famous accident with refrigerator.
Yeah.
I mean, Franco's legs were passable, but not great. You know what I'm saying? So, and the way his body looked is that I remember when Arnold first told me about Franco, I had only seen photos of him. And I said to Arnold was telling me how he was going to get Joe Weider to bring him over to the United States. And I said, well, Arnold, he looks about the same size as you. And Arnold started laughing. I said, what's so funny? He said, and Franco's like a little guy. He's like 5'3". I said, damn, his upper body. His upper body looks like he's like 6'2".
Yeah.
And that's what I discovered when I met Franco. His upper body was, he had the muscle of a guy much bigger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Unfortunately, his legs didn't match that. So his symmetry and proportion were off. And the way they judged at the NABBA show, this is an important point, was overall appearance.
Yeah.
The symmetry and proportion, as I said earlier, was paramount in the judging in London.
Yeah.
In other words, this is why Bill Pearl won so many times, because he also had that. Bill Pearl was never really ripped. He had great abs.
Yeah.
Bill Pearl, I don't remember seeing any photo of Bill where his legs could be called cut and defined, not once.
Yeah.
He had everything. He had a complete physique. Everything was in proportion, so he won, four NABBA Universe.
Four, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that explains why. Now, if this was an IFBB show, Franco might easily have beaten Chris.
Right.
Because the IFBB, they were looking for the muscle. they were willing to overlook the symmetry. The guy who had the most, let's say, showy physique would win. So in an IFBB show, Franco would have won that year.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
That's a pleasant change of pace, how the NABBA judges used to do it, where they would judge according to the old bodybuilding standards, like the Greeks. They looked at the symmetry. They looked at the shape. And that's a nice change from what happens today.
Well, I was indoctrinated in that when I first began bodybuilding. I always thought that you're supposed to have a complete physique.
Yeah.
You know, they used to call the head-to-toe body. In other words, all the body parts should be in proportion. I always geared my training to that.
Yeah. You
know, if a particular body part was getting out, I would try and train a little harder, you know? So
yeah.
Somewhere along the line, that was abandoned now, where they have these guys with freaky arms and underdeveloped chest and, you know.
And the emphasis just on hardness, on graininess, hardness, you know, over symmetry and shape.
Right. Oh, you got, I mean, as great as a guy like Dorian Yates is, for example, who won, I believe, what, 6 Mr. Olympia contests.
Yeah.
Towards the end, his proportions and symmetry were, to me, awful.
Yeah.
Not awful. I mean, he was still hard, but, I mean, in one show, he had this bicep practically on his shoulder. I was at that show, and he was posing next to a Nasser El-Sabadi. I was right 4 feet away from them backstage. And I was looking at them from the side, and I remember noticing that Nasser's legs from the side looked twice as big as Dorian's.
Yeah.
Because he had a full leg bicep, had full leg. Dorian had, like, no leg biceps at the show.
Hmm.
I mean, but of course, Dorian had those humongous calves.
Yeah.
So, see, it was almost like a trick. Like, Dorian's calves were so big that you almost didn't notice that his legs were out of proportion. You know, you just, like it was like with Chris, your eyes would look, oh, look at that guy's calves, my God.
And
you wouldn't even notice that his leg biceps were on below par. But his back didn't look right, even though he had his wide back. His symmetry and proportions were off. So if I were a judge, I would have given it to Nasser.
Yeah.
With that, he had everything. I mean, he was big. You might say he was too big, but he was in shape, and he had nice symmetry and proportion. That's what I believe in. And like you say, that was the judging standard at the NABBA universe.
Yeah, that's why that's why Chris Dickerson did well. Frank Zane did well there. Bill Pearl, like you said, he did really well there.
Yeah, if you look at the guys that won, even some of the lesser-known guys, like the British guys that won, like Len Sell,
mm-hmm.
and another guy, I can't remember his name, he had a beard. Even go back as far as Mickey Haggerty.
Yeah.
The father of the actress on Law & Order, Mariska, that's her dad.
He's
married to Jane Mansfield. I mean, he went in at 55 with a build that today would be considered a swimmer's physique.
Right, right.
You know, but if you look at photos for the day, he had all the body parts just like they like in London. He had everything was in proportion.
Yeah.
It wasn't big, but his shoulders, his calves, his leg, everything was in proportion. That's why he won. And the proof of the pudding, Mickey never won a Mr. America, but he won a Miss Universe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I remember even like, I think it was 76. When Bertil Fox went in, and Bertil Fox was really young, but he was really massive.
Yeah.
And he got third behind Kazuo Sudo. Remember Kazuo Sudo from Japan?
I remember that, yeah, Japanese guy, yeah.
Or no, I'm sorry, Bertil, I think, got second. Kazuo Sudo won, and Dale Adrian was in it, Mr. America. But there's no way in an IFBB contest Kazuo Sudo would beat Bertil Fox.
Yeah. No, Kazuo Sudo had a really nice, very deep abs, but, you know, not big anywhere, really, but he had a... Again, he had almost like a Chris Dickerson physique, because he had, like, everything was completely symmetrical and proportionate. So,
or like Serge Dubre. He looked a lot like Serge Dubre, too.
Yeah, he did those tricep poses like Serge Dubre. But in other words, that's what they liked in London. That's why he beat a guy like a monster, like Bertil Fox.
Yeah.
In any IFBB show, Bertil would have crushed him like a bug.
Right.
This guy would have no chance of beating Bertil.
Yeah.
Even though Bertil was famous for his lack of posing ability.
Yeah.
Bertil had these fantastic arms. You know, he used to do a double bicep like this.
Yeah, right, I know.
Do it like this. In other words, if he did it like this, his arms would be literally twice as big. He did it like Arnold spent once 2 hours trying to show him how to pose.
Really?
And went out and did the same bad pose. It went in one ear and out the other. Yeah.
Bertil did win the NABBA Universe for a couple years after that. Yeah.
Well, he had some poses, John, if you remember. Nobody could duplicate.
Yeah, that just muscular.
Just like Sergio owned this pose. Nobody could top Sergio with this pose, right?
Right.
Bertil had this pose. Arms down like that?
Yeah.
Nobody in the world could touch him. His arms look like I told you the famous story of when I came into Gold's on 2nd Street and Berto was getting ready for a photo session.
Yeah.
They used to have these famous balsa with dumbbells that weighed 1 pound, but they looked like they weighed 120. And I was doing these curls with dumbbells, and I thought it was the balsa because he was going like this.
Right.
It was just easy. I'm not exaggerating, like this. You know, he was warming up for the photos, and I said, and I leaned over to, and I said, I said to the photographer, I said, hey, you know, those balsa wood things look real at first. He says, Jerry, they're not balsa wood. Listen. And I heard the iron clanking, and I my mouth dropped. They were 90-pound dumbbells.
Oh,
90-pound dumbbells. And he was going like this. I said, my God, what arm strength this guy had.
Wow.
What, he had those tree trunk arms, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't even roll a 90-pound dumbbell. Forget about curling.
In that contest then, in the medium class, Frank Zane wins. That was the first time I think Frank entered the NAVI universe. And
yes,
he won the medium class and the overall. He beat out Albert Beckles. So that was a good, right, that was a good, yeah, class too.
That was the year I was living next door to Frank Zane in Santa Monica.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, on Bay Street in Santa Monica. He was in apartment 11 and I was in apartment 12, right next door.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember when he went over. I remember when he went over to London. I remember that.
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Still remember that. Yeah. He came back with that, you know, that kind of trophy they gave with the little,
like a bowl or something, right? Like a cup or something.
Yeah, I think it might have been a cup, or there was another one that had like, it looked like, how to describe it? It looked like little pillars around something. You know.
Okay.
Yeah, that was. I don't know. Maybe that was for the pro show. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But that was one of the trophies that they give. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Frank Richards from England won the tall class.
Yeah, Frank. Yeah,
he was a good shot earlier. Yeah, but Frank Zane won the overall.
Yeah. Frank was the hardest guy in the show. That's why he won.
Yeah.
He was in really good shape. He was still teaching too at the time.
Really?
He was teaching junior high school, only maybe a mile away from where he lived. Mark Twain Junior.
Okay. Yeah.
Mathematics.
I think he did that all the way up until 77, right? When he won.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I used to see him go to work. He'd wear like a sport jacket, tie. He'd have glasses on.
Yeah.
He looked like just an athletic guy. You'd never know this was Mr. Universe.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, just like almost like, it reminded me of like Clark Kent and Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
You know how Clark Kent would wear the glasses and nobody would realize he's Superman?
Right.
You know, Frank Zane would put on the mild-mannered teacher, you know?
Yeah.
So super bodybuilder.
So then the pro division that I – Boyer Coe won the short class. They had a short class and a tall class, so Boyer won the short class. He didn't really have much competition. And then Arnold won the tall class over Reg Park and Dave Draper. So that was a great lineup. Talk about some legends in there, huh?
That's right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Reg got second, but a lot of people thought Dave Draper could have got second.
Yeah.
I think Reg was like 42 at that time.
Yeah, Reg was 42, and I heard different stories. One story was that Arnold felt a little bad about having to compete against Reg, who was his mentor. That was his bodybuilding idol. Other stories say that, and again, I don't know if this is true, that Arnold was kind of being a little sarcastic to Reg at the show.
Yeah, I heard he tried to psych him out, too.
Yeah, like something to the order of like, well, Reg, you were great in your day, but, you know, now's my chance. So congratulations on whatever you're going to place, but you have no chance of beating, that kind of stuff.
I mean, you got Arnold at 23 and Reg is 42. And I think Reg was natural, right? He was a natural bodybuilder.
He was natural. I get in arguments with people about that, by the way. Because, in fact, just the other day on Facebook, I got in a little thing with a guy. He said something about, to think that Steve Reeves didn't take steroids is really, you're pretty naive to believe that. In fact, I know for a fact that Steve Reeves was taking steroids in the 30s.
Yeah, 30s.
So I said, hey, Dumbo, Steve Reeves was born in 1928. Second of all, the testosterone didn't even become available at all. It was isolated in 35, and it didn't become available until around 1940. And second of all, where's your evidence that Steve Reeves, did you see him? Did you see him inject? Otherwise, shut your fucking mouth. Unless you, you know what I mean? I like these guys, these like millennial guys that weren't even born when Steve Reeves was around, and they're insisting, you know, they look at a guy, his physique, and Steve Reeves had a beautiful physique. And I think people off the street would admire Steve Reeves' physique. And that's how great the guy was, is how beautiful his body was. And yet, you know, they look at this guy, well, how could you develop a body like that without drugs? They trained in genetics, that's what it's called. And Steve Reeves was very, you know, he trained hard, he had good. And the same with Reg Park. I knew Reg Park very well. I used to have a lot of conversations with Reg. Reg was very adamantly against steroids. He hated them. He never used them. Reg used to, the way Reg got big was he's very heavy. I mean, he was one of the first bodybuilders to bench press 500 pounds.
Right,
he
did
very heavy weights, heavy squats, and he also used to, he did that thing with, remember the bulking up stuff?
Yeah.
Reg used to bulk up and get real heavy and then trim down.
Yeah.
That's what that's the technique. And he used to have what they call a 5x5 system to get big. He'd do five sets of five reps of a major exercise like squats and bent over rows. That was his size building routine.
Yeah.
But see, John, it pisses me off personally when these guys who don't even know these men, who aren't around to defend themselves anymore, when they accuse them of using steroids because these punks who say that don't have the genetics or aren't willing to work hard enough to build some muscle because they look like crap. Rather than give these guys the credit, the old timers, give them the credit they deserve. He took steroids. I know he took steroids. Yeah, shut up. Unless you have proof. And I even say that today, believe it or not. And people call me crazy. They'll say, well, don't you think this guy uses steroids? Look at him. I'll give an example. This guy, Mike O'Hearn. I know Mike O'Hearn. I don't say he's a close friend, but I know him. We're friendly. You know, people say, Jerry, Mike O'Hearn, he's in his 50s. He's definitely on a ton of steroids. I mean, look at the man. He looks better than he did when he's 25. Come on. My position is, I don't know. How could you say that, Jerry? Look at that. Because I don't know. I said he could be what they call an outlier. Maybe he's so freaky. And I know one thing about Mike. He's very, very strong.
Yeah.
He's also one of the powerful. I watched him train. The guy is humongously strong.
Yeah.
And he's still strong in his 50s.
Yeah.
I said he could just be a freak of nature. And I'm not ruling out maybe he does take the drugs. My point is I don't know for sure. So I'm not going to make a definitive statement that Mike O'Hearn uses a lot because I don't know.
Yeah.
That, you know, if he says I don't use them, I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to argue with it. If the other people want to yell and scream because Mike O'Hearn looks 1,000 times better than them, they're 20 years old, this 55, whatever his year man, makes them look like garbage, that's their problem. I'm not going to say anything. That's my point. I'll say that about any of them. And anybody, if I'm still writing for the magazines, and one of these pro bodybuilders came up to me, you know, who looks like he's just on a boatload of drugs, or, you know, Jerry, I'm natural, I wouldn't argue with him.
Yeah.
I would not say, hey, come on, man. Listen, I've been around for you. What are you going to say this to my face? Look at you. You got veins on top of a vein. You're going to tell me that you're natural? Really? You're going to insult my intel? I don't say that. Okay. I'll let other people develop their own opinions.
Right.
I'm not going to take an opinion on it. Now, if I see the guy using drugs, that's what I'll say.
Right.
If I see Mike O'Hearn inject growth hormone or whatever, I'll say, yeah, he uses drugs. I saw him use it.
Yeah.
I saw Arnold use drugs. I saw Frank Zane use. I saw the man use drugs.
Yeah.
So I say, yeah, he used drugs.
Yeah.
Because I saw it.
Right.
Unless I see it, I feel I shouldn't say it. That's my feelings.
Right. Plus, Steve Reeves was only, I think, like 215, right? At 6 foot.
Yeah, that's all.
How tall was Steve Reeves? 6'1", 6'2"?
He was just under 6'1".
Okay.
Yeah. And you look at the guy, there's nothing about his physique that says steroids.
No. Reg Park either. I mean, Reg Park was big, but he does look freaky, you know.
Oh, yeah, they don't have that freaky look, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, from a scientific point of view, one giveaway of a guy using a lot of steroids, I know this sounds crazy, but certain muscles in the body have more androgen receptors than others. And, you know, steroids work, testosterone, anabolics, they work by interacting with androgen receptors. It turns out that one of the muscle groups in the body that has an abundance of androgen receptors is the trapezius muscle.
Yeah.
So you'll see a lot of the guys that use steroids have these gigantic trapezius that almost you could not develop with no matter how many shrugs you did. You know what I mean? That's not a definitive way of looking at it, but it's something. When I first read that in the Science Journal, I started to look at the guy and said, I mean, you look at, I remember Ronnie Coleman, his traps was so big, it looked like he had like was eating up his head. He had like giant traps sticking out, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, so, you know, that's just one way. But
rear deltoids too, right, Jer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Rear delts too.
I just talked to, I helped a guy last week with his posing. This guy was a natural competitor. He looks really good.
Yeah.
About a couple inches taller than me. He's probably 5'10", 173, but he looks fantastic.
Right.
So he was in a men's physique contest at the Team Universe, which was not drug tested, I think.
Okay.
And he said, man, I got to work on my rear delts. these guys who placed ahead of me, they got huge rear delts. And I said, well, that's one of the receptor sites for steroids. So usually those, he goes, oh, I didn't know that. He goes, I thought I just had weak rear delts.
No, no, you're right. No, the rear delts will be bigger.
Well, in that contest, Arnold, really, this was probably the best Arnold that of his career up until that point, 1970. Because he made remarkable improvement from, like, you look at 68, 69, 70. He was much bigger, I thought, and really cut. Like, when I look at those pictures of Arnold in a lineup with him and Reg Park and Dave Draper, he's just, I think he's, like, way ahead of everybody.
Right. Well, this is, 1970 was a turning point for Arnold where his physique, you'd say, really started to mature.
Yeah.
Because he got rid of that earlier.
He's only 23.
Yeah, he's only 23, but he started to kind of adopt, you know, change his diet around. He was lying in the sun a lot and all that. And he got that kind of physique maturity look. He started to get harder and harder. But 1970 was the turning point year for him. That's when his physique really became, let's say, more finished.
Yeah.
You know, and from there it got better and better, if you remember. Except if you want to, like, use the exception of 1980, where it was a little bit step backwards.
Yeah, yeah.
It was not Arnold at his best. But some people argue that Arnold was still good enough to win. Now, that's a debatable issue. Yeah. You know, the famous 80 Olympia, you know. I don't know how you feel about that, but I look at photos and Arnold was definitely not at his best, but especially his legs, you know.
Yeah, his legs were right now.
If Arnold didn't win, ironically, the guy who would have won would be Chris Dickerson again.
Yeah, yeah.
And the funny thing was, when you think about it, Chris was more symmetrical and proportionate, even though he's much smaller than Arnold.
Right.
In other words, if you were judging strictly on the classic, let's say, delineations of a physique contest, Dickerson should have won.
Yeah.
He was in good, great shape. Everything was in proportion and symmetry, symmetrical. Whereas Arnold's legs were completely out of balance.
Yeah.
I mean, he still had some definition. It's not that, but they just didn't have. He didn't have any sweep to his thigh. His calves still looked pretty big. And of course, he still had those big biceps and stuff.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I would say that was Arnold at about maybe 75% of his best.
Right.
At the 80 Olympia, yeah. But some people again say he was still good enough to win.
But in 70, he seemed like he was much bigger than 69. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
He was bigger, but he still had that finished look.
Yeah, he did. Well, he trained really hard. You know, I told you Arnold's philosophy was after each contest. He felt that once you reached a certain level of development, you couldn't make extraordinary changes in your physique. In other words, let's say Arnold competed at 230, right? In other words, you couldn't go from 230 cut to 260 cut in 1 year. It just wasn't possible.
Yeah.
So his philosophy was to pick out a certain muscle group that might have been a little bit lagging and to train it extra hard. And he felt that the judges would actually notice that, let's say forearms. Let's say he improved his form from 1 year to the next. He felt the judges would actually notice that, and it would create some sort of hypnotic effect when they say, Arnold's has really improved since last year, even though he's basically the same but had better forearms. That was Arnold's philosophy, believe it or not. That's what he did this year. You know. And sometimes it would be an overall look. Like in 74, he figured he's competing against – wasn't it Lou that year? Lou Ferrigno was –
Yeah, Lou.
He figured Lou's going to try and come in big. He'll come in big, but he's going to come in harder. He's going to come in harder than Lou could get. So he came in big and hard. That was his goal.
Yeah.
And he won. And he won. Yeah. See?
Right.
That's what he did that year. And it worked. You know.
And in 69, he lost to Sergio. So I think he felt like maybe the guy's got to come in bigger for 70, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He knew he had to come in bigger. Yeah. But he also knew that he didn't want to slip into the physique he had before. The one that lost to Chet Yorton in 66, which was a big, bulky guy.
Or 68 when he lost to Frank Zane.
Right, exactly, right. That's a good, better example, where he didn't have the finish.
Yeah.
It was a tricky road to walk because he had to have more size, but he also had to retain or increase the finished look of hard definition, you know, the winning look, in other words. And he did it. He did it, you know.
Yeah, there's a picture of Arnold from that 70 NABBA universe where he's doing a front double bicep. Sucking in the vacuum. Man, I think that's one of the best front double biceps I've ever seen. It looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, I remember being a kid and just looking at that picture all the time for inspiration, because I want to look like that. He just looks so huge.
I used to have a color poster of Arnold in that pose, and you might have seen that. you know, the double arm pose like that. And it was just I used to marvel at it because, I mean, this is many years ago, you know, but today somebody would look at that photo and say it's photoshopped. Because you can't believe how big Arnold's arms were in that photo.
Yeah.
You just can't believe it. It looks, I mean, but there was no Photoshop then. This was the 70s. But his arms were so, I mean, it was also, like you said, he had the vacuum. His
legs were cut. It just looked like a perfect front double bicep, you know?
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. Yeah. I remember having, I think, I don't know whether Arnold autographed it. I don't remember. I should have kept that damn thing. I don't know what happened to it. I lost it years ago. Arnold had that look,
So that 70 was the year where I remember in reading Education of a Bodybuilder, where Arnold said he did the Triple Crown. He won three championships in three different organizations. So he won that NABBA Universe, then he won the AAU Mr. World, and then he won the IFBB Mr. Olympia.
That's right,
So he established himself as a king because he beat everybody in every organization. There was no doubt that he was the best bodybuilder in the world. Because I remember when he won the 67 Universe, after it was over, he found out that there was an IFBB Mr. Universe, and then there was a Mr. Olympia. And he's like, wow, there's like three Mr. Universes. I'm just one, you know.
Yeah.
And Bill Pearl won the pro, you know. So now he established himself as the winner in all these organizations.
Yeah. Well, when I first met Arnold, I remember him telling me that his plans were to win the NABBA Universe six times. But I guess that changed in 70. When, you know, he realized that, you know, the Olympia was open for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Olympia, I guess to him, meant more prestige. You know, it was a pro show in this.
Well, I think Weider also stopped. Remember, because he won, this was his fifth one. Yeah.
Weider had a lot.
He would have won six the next year, but Weider wouldn't let him go in.
That's right, yeah. Remember the famous, 71 when
Bill Pearl
was going to go up against. Let me ask you, John, who do you think would have won if Arnold came in, let's say, looking like he did in 70 or even a little bit better compared to Bill Pearl as he looked in 71? Who do you think would have won that year in 71?
I would pick Arnold. I think he had more definition. Better back, better leg.
Yeah. I think so, too, but I wonder about some sort of political thing, you know, because
Bill was really favored by the NABBA judges.
He's favored by the NABBA, and also, was it Frank Saint? Somebody told a story about how they had to turn around at certain angles.
Maybe Frank Saint said that,
And Bill Pearl refused to turn to the required angle, and they let him get away with it. It's almost like, you know, and I think Frank or somebody said, it's almost like he had control of the judges.
Frank won his class, and Bill won his class, and they didn't compare him. And they just gave you overall the bill. They didn't even compare them.
See, that's another indication that. Again, Bill Pearl was my idol. I have nothing but respect for the guy. I'm not trying to put him down, but it makes you wonder in relation to Arnold and Bill Pearl whether even if Arnold showed up with a better physique, maybe they would have given it to Bill Pearl anyway because of some sort of better word to you, political reason or something like that.
Right.
So you wonder, because I agree with you. Arnold probably, if you went muscle for muscle, Arnold would have won.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, so sure if it would have actually happened that way.
I know. It's interesting. It's one of those unanswered questions we'll always be asking, you know.
And Bill Pearl probably knew it too, which is why he wasn't afraid of Arnold showing up.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
You know, another contest that's not talked about from 1970 is the IFBB Mr. Universe, which was held in Yugoslavia, and Franco won that. Franco Colombo won that overall.
Yeah.
That he didn't really have any competition. Ahmet Anulu from Turkey won the medium class.
Yeah.
And Karl Kanraf from Austria won the tall class.
Oh, yeah.
Franco won the overall.
Karl Kanraf, I'm friends with him on Facebook. He still works out. He's still pretty good shape.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I guess it established Franco then as a pro probably in the IFBB because he won the Mr. Universe. So he was eligible for the Mr. Olympia then after that.
Yeah. For some reason, that contest had very little – even back then – this is when the magazines were really popular. I don't remember seeing more than one or two photos of that show.
Yeah, it's hard to find pictures of it. I look for pictures of it on the internet. It's hard to find.
It's like no publicity. Now, that guy you mentioned who got second, Anulu.
Yeah.
I believe he competed. I'm not sure whether he won the NABBA Universe. He did win.
He Tony Pearson, 1 year. Yeah.
Yeah, because I know he competed several times. I once referred to him as a perennial NABBA Universe competitor, one of my articles.
Yeah, he had a long career. That guy had a long career.
He competed in a lot of the NABBA shows.
Yeah.
He had a nice physique, pretty muscular, too.
And he was doing the IFBB Universe for many years, too, in the 80s. when he was older. Yeah.
Earlier,
Phil Williams was in it. I think he was in it that year.
I think I saw about a year ago, somebody put a photo of him online. He's still in good shape.
I saw that too. Yeah.
I like to see that. You know, I really like to see that. Yeah. I love to see the guys from years ago that they're still, like Tony Pearson, those guys.
Yeah.
You know, they're still working out, and including Arnold, you know, they're still working out, and, you know, they're still staying in shape. I like that. I find that very inspiring. And on the other hand, from the other point of view, when I hear the guys are sick or something like Chris is, you know, having health problems,
yeah,
it makes me feel bad. Or, you know, or even worse, a guy like Chet dying. I have the opposite feeling. I feel awful when I see that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I just want everybody to stay in shape and be happy, you know?
Yeah. I guess Chris Dickerson's not doing well. I guess he's going to be hospitalized for the rest of his life. He'll be in that nursing home, I guess.
It's terrible. Terrible. Yeah. Gee, that's awful.
Yeah, it is. Especially when you look back and see these old pictures of them and remember how they used to be and how great they used to be. They were great champions and stuff. But I guess we all get older, and you never know what's going to happen when you get older, right?
Yeah, but you wonder what makes one guy continue to work out and be fairly healthy and another guy get sick enough to be in a nursing home? Is it a genetic thing or something that they might have done wrong along the line? You know, you know, I don't know, you know.
Because we just had Bill Pearl this year turn 90.
90, yeah.
Yeah.
And you see the photo of him?
He looked fantastic.
He doesn't look 90 to me.
No, he looks 70.
The thing that I noticed about Bill, all right, he was sitting there wearing a shirt. He wasn't posing or anything.
No.
But he doesn't have that atrophied look that you'd expect from a 90-year-old.
No.
I mean, most 90-year-olds, even if they're fairly healthy, there's no getting away. They tend to look atrophied. They're kind of all fucking up and stuff, you know.
Right.
I mean, the muscles just disappear, you know. But Bill still looks pretty big.
Yeah, he looks robust. He looks healthy. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got the rosy chin. Right. I'd say the guy looks like he's fucking, you know, 220 pounds.
I know.
I mean, I heard that he has Parkinson's disease. I mean, I hope the guy goes on and on, you know.
Me too.
I mean, he's a, you know, just a great guy and a terrific bodybuilder. I mean, he wasn't the most cut bodybuilder, but he certainly, to me, is one of the greatest ever because of his, he had everything, you know.
I think a lot of people feel the same way. And then we had Clint Eastwood turn 90 this year, too.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood, yeah. Did you ever have a chance to interview Bill Pearl, or is there any chance of you interviewing him, John, you think?
No, not on my show. I never interviewed him. I heard that he doesn't want to do interviews anymore, so.
Oh, okay. I bet you it's the Parkinson's problem.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
No, it's probably it. Yeah, it's too bad. He could tell you some great stories, I bet. You know?
Oh, man. That's what I love to talk about the old guys with, you know, about those old stories and get it from the horse's mouth, you know.
Yeah. I would have also liked to interview. I only spoke to him once at Clarence Ross. He would have been a great interview.
Yeah.
Listen, the little bit he told me was interesting, you know. Like when he told me that he felt that Steve Reeves had a better physique than him, that shocked me.
Yeah.
He beat Steve Reeves twice.
Right.
He used the word beautiful. He says, oh, I was muscular, but Steve Reeves had a beautiful physique. That's what he said.
Right.
I never forgot that. I said, wow, what a compliment from a guy who he beat. He actually beat him twice.
He beat Steve Reeves, right. That's the mystery. You know? Yeah.
I wish these guys' stories could be preserved. You know, I mean, there's so many great stories.
Yeah.
And so many truths, because like I say, even without the steroid stuff, there's so much misconceptions about these guys.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's best for the guys themselves to just speak and tell the truth.
Yeah.
You know? Set the record straight. That's what I'd like to see, you know?
Right.
And you're the guy to do it because you ask him the right questions.
Yeah, thank you.
I mean, you ask him everything, you know, I mean, when you go into how they got into it and started training and how they train, this is what people want to know.
Right.
They want to know. Right. They want to know the stuff. I know I would have.
Yeah,
you know,
I love hearing their real feelings about how they felt against this competitor or how they felt they looked.
I mean, that's beautiful. That's great. Most of the guys you interview, I know. And yet, every time I listen to them, I learn stuff. I say, wow, Boyer did that? I didn't know that.
Right.
I always go,
right.
I'm wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I feel love about it. You know, I always learn stuff about this thing. You know, it's great.
See the interview I did with Boyer and Mike Callender at the same time?
Yes, I did. Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was great, just because they hadn't seen each other in a long time. They got to reconnect, you know.
Yeah. Roy Kelly, he's such a humble guy, isn't he, Roy?
Oh, he's such a great guy, yeah.
I mean, you know, this guy doesn't beat his own drum at all. I mean, you know.
I think Roy's about 80 years old.
Is he that old?
I think so, yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then I also like the one you did with that Australian guy, Roger Walker.
Yeah, yeah. He's a straight shooter, isn't he?
I love the fact that he was so blunt. He didn't hold anything back.
He didn't hold anything back.
I mean, he just, you know, that's the way Chet Yorn was.
Yeah.
Chet Yorn just, I mean, I'm talking to when he was sober, not when he would just tell you exactly what he thought.
Right.
He wouldn't hold anything back, no matter who it was.
Right.
And this guy, Roger Walker, was like that. I loved it. He's right. Leaning back in the chair just saying, and I was cringing. Some of the things he was saying, I was cringing. I said, oh, my God, I can't believe he said that, you know?
Right,
but
right.
I guess his attitude was, hey, who cares, you know? What are they going to do to me?
Right.
You know?
Did you hear how he was in the Marines when he was a young age? Wow, he's a tough guy, you know?
He is a tough guy. Yeah. He strikes me as a guy you wouldn't want to mess with.
Right,
you know,
right.
You know, you get this guy mad, you know, even at his age, he'll knock your head right off.
Well, when we were talking about the 1980 Olympia, and Meltzer went up to Arnold.
Yeah.
He said, I just sat back. He goes, I always like to see a good fight.
Yeah, I remember that.
Hey, he goes, damn, they broke it up. He goes, I wanted to see a good fight.
Yeah. I know. I remember that. He said Ben Weider was standing there watching it. I remember.
Right.
John, did you ever interview John Torelli from Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's another good guy.
Yeah.
John, another guy who, by the way, I think was a very underrated physique.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at photos of the guy. He had a great – another guy with beautiful symmetry and proportions.
Right.
And I said this to him. He's interviewed me.
And he interviewed me, too. Yeah.
Yeah. And he got a little embarrassed almost because I was laying in eyes. John, I think you were just a fantastic, you know, he looked a little, you know, but there I am. I said, I'm just telling you the truth, how I feel. I said, you had a complete head-to-toe body, you had all the body. He said, I really appreciate it. But I meant it.
Yeah.
I don't say that to people unless I mean it. You know, it's like Franco never liked me because I never said that he was a great bodybuilder. He actually took it personal. You know, I don't think he was a bad bodybuilder. Obviously, he had some great... But to me, he didn't have the symmetry and proportions, so he didn't have the kind of physique I like. And I'm not going to go up to him and say, hey, Franco, you look fantastic. I don't do that. I said it to Arnold because I believed it with Arnold.
Right.
This is the way I've always been. I don't give false compliments, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, I saw competing, I think, I don't know whether it was the first Natural Universe, I can't remember. And I'm thinking, wow, I didn't know John was really good. Oh, seriously, I knew you were good, but I was impressed.
Yeah,
I mean, you had that look, you had that head to toe body, and I was your arms look gigantic, look great.
Right.
I said, I knew you were good, but I didn't know you were that good.
Right.
I saw that video, and I don't mean that as a put down. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I just hadn't seen you in your prime, let's say. You know.
Yeah. I feel the same way when I look at those videos. I'm like, wow, I didn't know I was that good either.
well, to a lesser extent, I look at it. There's a photo I have on Facebook. 16 years old, flexing my arm, the side tricep. It looks like it's a 22-inch arm. Now I look at this little skinny toothpick arm. What the hell happened? Where's my triceps? Where did it go? You know.
Yeah.
But you know, what are you going to do? You just have to do like you said, you got to do the best you can.
Right. Well, let's wrap up 1970 talking about that Mr. Olympia, which was also held with the Mr. America and the Mr. World. So that was... You know, they used to have all those contests together back then in the 60s and early 70s.
Yeah.
I think this was the first one. Were you at that show, Jerry? It was in New York again.
1970?
Yeah.
No, I wasn't at that one.
I think they moved it away from the Brooklyn Academy of Music and they moved it somewhere else.
No, I definitely wasn't at that one.
Yeah. Because I read an article by Rick Wayne and he said they were having problems with the Brooklyn Academy of Music because these guys were using oil and it was getting all over the curtains. So the Brooklyn Academy said, that's it. You can't hold it here anymore. So they had to hold it at, I think it was a town hall or something in New York.
Yeah.
So they had to move it to a different location. But I think they might have had the prejudging at a gym or something. I'm not really sure. And then they had the evening show at this town hall.
Yeah, probably, yeah. No, that I was still, I think I was in
California.
I didn't go to that one. Yeah, I was in California for that one. Yeah.
Well, the Mr. America that year was won by Mike Katz. So yes. He finally won. It was, did you ever hear that story about, I read this in the magazines, about Sergio showed up at the show. Now, Sergio won the three Mr. Olympias before that, 67 to 69. But then he lost that Mr. World contest to Arnold. Right. He was pissed off about that. So then he shows up at the Olympia, and I heard the story. They're checking in all the competitors. All the Mr. America competitors are checking in. Eddie Giuliani was there, and Mike Katz, and a bunch of guys. And Sergio walks in with his manager, and the manager tells him, Sergio wants to enter the Mr. America contest. And the promoter was Bud Parker, the same guy, Bud Parker. And he goes, what? And all the Mr. America guys go, what? You know, oh, my God, Sergio wants to go to Mr. America? So he said, yeah, he's an American citizen, and nothing would make his mother feel happier than winning Mr. America. And they said, he can't enter Mr. America. He's already Mr. Olympia three times, you know.
Right.
So they said he's going to pull out of the contest if he doesn't compete.
Wow.
So they said, all right. So they ended up giving him an honorary Mr. America award. And then Mike Katz won the real Mr. America. But I haven't seen any pictures on stage with Sergio with the Mr. America trophy. But this is what I read in one of Rick Wayne's books.
It's probably true. I never heard that myself. I didn't know about that.
But I'm wondering if that probably hurt Sergio's chances of winning the Mr. Olympia at the same show. Because he created all these problems, you know.
Yeah.
He's like being difficult, and then he ends up losing the Olympia to Arnold that year.
Yeah, I wonder about that. But kind of like that story I told you about Warren Frederick.
Yeah.
One of my first bodybuilding shows was a novice contest that was held at the Wagner Youth Center in Harlem. They called it the Mr. Wagner, if I remember correctly, or novice Mr. Wagner, something like that. And I was getting ready to, you know, we're all backstage, you know, we're all teenagers, you know, we're all, I was, what, 15 or something? We're all teenagers. And all of a sudden I see this guy show up and he looked familiar to me. And I'm thinking, oh, you know, who's he? And, you know, and he strips down and I see this Warren Frederick. I mean, this guy was a pro bodybuilder for
crying. Yeah.
He'd already won like an American contest.
Yeah.
So I said to one of the other guys, I said, look at this. I guess he's guest posing. So then somebody says, no, he wants to enter. I said, wait a minute. He's going to enter a novice contest? He's Mr. America? You got to be kidding. Hey, look, if he enters, I'm out of here. I'm not going to even stand next to the stage on this guy.
Right.
This guy makes us all look like we never touched a weight. Are you kidding me? Well, it turns out that the judges knew, you know, they knew who he was. And they said, get out of here.
Why would I even want to enter it?
I don't know. Somebody said he lived in the area and just decided to pop in and enter or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll never forget that, looking at this guy. He had veins all over the place. I mean,
yeah, he was freaky. Yeah. He was a big biker.
I mean, I was 15 years old. I mean, you know, come on, you know. Jeez, it would be like me trying to jump into Mr. Olympia at that time. They said, get your posing trunks. And
right.
Forget it. You know, it was a funny thing. I don't understand the mentality of some of these guys, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's talk also about the Mr. World that was held that night. That had some great guys. Franco was in it, Rick Wayne, and Dave Draper. So they each won their height classes.
Yeah.
And then they had to pose down between Franco, Rick Wayne, and Dave Draper. And so a lot of people thought Rick Wayne was going to win, or even Franco could have won.
Yeah.
But Dave Draper ended up winning.
Dave Draper won. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess he was bigger than those guys. Rick Wayne was quite a physique back then.
He was in great shape. I saw pictures from that show, man. Rick Wayne and both him and Franco were both in great shape.
I remember when he was training at Gold's there around the same time. You know, tremendous, very vascular.
Yeah.
Veins all over his arms and shoulders. You know, very deep abs.
Yeah, really good abs. Real muscular, real ripped.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised that Dave beat both of those guys, you know?
Yeah.
No offense to Dave, but, I mean, those guys were like a little more – well, Dave was pretty – I guess it was because of his size.
Yeah.
Dave was much bigger. Both those guys were short.
Dave was in great shape that year, though, because at the Navy Universe, which was, a couple of weeks before that, he got third behind Ridge Park. A lot of people thought he should have got second to Arnold. Because he was right. – I guess he was in good condition. He was really vascular, real ripped.
Yeah, he was in good condition. So, I guess, now that I think of it, he probably should have won that world.
Yeah.
He was in good shape, yeah.
So you had Franco win the Universe, and then Dave Draper won the Mr. World. And then we go to the Mr. Olympia, and so that was the big showdown between Arnold and Sergio. And then Arnold turned the tables, and he beat Sergio for the first time. Well, he beat him at the Mr. World, and then he beat him at Mr. Olympia. So he dethroned the reigning Mr. Olympia.
Was that the famous Olympia where Arnold said, okay, it's all done, let's leave the stage?
Yeah, that was the one, yeah.
He acts like he's leaving the stage.
Yeah.
And leaves the stage too. And then Arnold comes back and starts posing, and the audience is going crazy.
Yeah,
and
so yeah.
He goes backstage somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Was that the show that happened?
That was the show, yeah, yeah. You know, our friend Wayne Galash has a video or DVD or download now. It's probably a download. But it's called Arnold the Early Years, and they actually have footage of that. They have a video footage.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember there was a
big, I don't think Arnold really had that planned. I think he really was – they didn't really do pose downs back then, or did they back then? When you saw that Mr. Olympia, did –
No
pose. I think that was one of the first actual pose downs they had with Arnold and Sergio.
That was one of the first.
And the crowd was going crazy, and I think when they were to the back, when they had their backs to the audience, Arnold said, "Hey, Sergio, I'm beat. Let's get out of here," you know. So then Sergio left, and everybody started booing, so then Arnold stopped. And then he's like, come on back, what are you doing?
Yeah. You know, you see, the implication was that Sergio gave up.
Yeah, exactly.
So Arnold should win. You know what I mean? And that's the psychological message that was sent.
But looking at the pictures of that, I kind of think Arnold should have won because he was more cut than Sergio. Yeah. Sergio looked like way too smooth. He was bigger, but he was too smooth.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, you know how it is with Sergio. Sergio didn't believe in dieting.
Yeah.
He used to drink Coca-Cola and stuff like that all the way up to the show. And,
right.
You know, he was just a genetic. To look as good as he did, considering the way he ate, was just phenomenal, and he's a genetic freak. Nobody could get away with that.
Right.
Don't know what he did for that famous show in Essen when he did deserve to win the Olympics.
Yeah, was that great shape for that.
73?
72. Yeah, 2 years later.
Yeah. I mean, he might have actually dieted for the show. I don't know. I think his son told me, I think he did diet for the show for the first time. Mm-hmm. Sergio Genetic told me that. But the thing is, could you imagine if this guy had really dieted and done
something? I mean, yeah.
Look what he did, what he produced doing everything wrong.
Yeah, I know. But when you look at pictures of Sergio from like when he was winning the Olympia in the 60s, the late 60s, he seemed like he was more muscular and cut then. It seemed like in the 70s he tried to get bigger and bigger, and he kind of lost that definition. He lost that quality, you know?
Yeah. But I'll tell you, he had some extraordinary the forearm and upper arm balance. I don't think anyone's ever exceeded that.
Yeah. Well, even now when I look at those pictures from that 70 Olympia, his size was so big, you know, especially for back then.
I know. I think that if Sergio was at his peak, let's say today, and he did what the guys today are doing as far as drugs and dieting, I think he'd beat all of them, including Phil Heath.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Sergio's torso, He had the slabs of pectorals that Phil Heath is relatively weak in the chest compared to his shoulders.
Yeah, yeah.
Completely overshadowed. His arms and shoulders completely overshadow his chest.
Right.
And again, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just saying it as it is. Where Sergio, he had that. The guys back then, like Arnold's, they had these slab like pecs. They were like slabs of.
Yeah.
You, not many guys have that today, you know?
And if
you take a guy like Sergio and somehow you would have. He would have put him in his peak years, and he did everything right. He trained a little differently. You know, he took the drugs the guys they take today, and he dieted. I think he'd be unbeatable today. I really believe that.
I do too.
Because you know what? He would look different. It wouldn't look like the surgeon we saw. It would be just a freak. Just imagine striations all over the place.
Yeah.
But even bigger than he is.
Right.
And tiny waist.
Yeah.
He's got those slab pecs, but now it cuts all over. Oh my God. Phil Heath would probably just scream and run off the stage.
Yeah. He probably wouldn't really blow out his waist that much because he had those tiny hip structure, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't think Sergio would have gotten that big.
Because
he had a little tiny waist.
Yeah.
I don't think he could even, he'd have to go out of his way to get the bloated.
Yeah, I don't think he'd get it if he wanted to.
Yeah, but it's as athletic. But on the other hand, if he dieted, his abs would have been really sharp and stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine that. That's a, what a look. Like Sergio Bray had deep abs and a little waist. Usually it's one or the other. Usually the guys with deep abs have wider waists.
Right.
Or guys with very little, small waist have weak abs. It's
right.
You really find both of them together, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
That's a hell of a combination, boy. And that
Sergio had the legs too back then, which not many, not many people had legs like that.
He had everything. I mean, the leg bicep, he had the sweep on the thighs and big calves.
Yeah, right.
Jeez, you know, I mean, I could just imagine if this guy had was around today, you know, younger. Well, yeah, I guess you could say that Sergio Jr., but he approaches his father, but he doesn't have the...
He doesn't have the tiny waist.
Yeah, he doesn't. He said it himself.
Yeah.
You know, one of the first conversations I had with Sergio Jr., I said, you know, you have a lot of, because he has big forearms like his father and stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, I see a lot of your father's muscle shape in you. He says, yeah, but I never got that tiny waist he had. That's what he said himself.
Yeah.
And I said,
And back then, you know, you're going back to 1970, the guys weren't that big. I mean, Sergio was, now today everybody's big. But back then, there was only like one Arnold and one Sergio. Yeah. They were the best, you know.
You certainly didn't see guys on the stage at 5'10", weighing 280 pounds.
No.
It just wouldn't have. If a guy was like that, he'd be like so fat they'd have to wheel him out of the wheelbarrow.
I wonder if they had social media back then, like what the fans thought of Arnold beating Sergio that year.
That would have been interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would have been interesting, yeah.
Yeah. That was a big turning point for Arnold. That was a big year for him. You know, 1970 was his year.
That was the year that he, you know, that changed. That's when Arnold became the literally the king of bodybuilding.
That's
when he took over.
Right. Your
first-hand information on that one, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I was doing the research. I was writing down some of the people who won these contests. In 1980, they had a lot of those Grand Prix shows. And talking about Casey and Chris Dickerson, they were both winning the shows. Like, Chris would win one and Casey would win one, I think. Chris ended up winning five of them, and Casey won three of them.
Right.
So that was pretty wild.
Yeah.
Because now we're talking about 70 when they competed in the Mr. America, and now here we are 10 years later, and they're competing against each other again.
Well, that was the year I told you when Casey first showed up. He was fat and out of shape. And
yeah. That was it? That was 1980?
Yeah, he was training for a Grand Prix show, he said.
Yeah.
He wound up winning three of them. You know,
he was ripped for those shows. God, he was ripped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and remember, he started out 3 months earlier. He was fat, and he had a pot belly and everything. I mean, there was no photos of looking like that.
Yeah.
But I saw it myself. I mean, you couldn't even recognize him.
Wow.
He was a phenomenal bodybuilder. He really was, Casey.
Yeah.
Another guy, too. Yeah, another guy, I feel bad. He passed away. Very sad.
Yeah. Yeah, I never even met him. I never had a chance to even meet him. And he was lived right here in Florida. But I think he might have passed away before I even moved here, right around the time I moved here.
Yeah, I remember he tried to make a comeback in one of the Masters Olympia one year.
It was terrible, right?
Yeah, I was there, and he's backstage, and he just didn't look good, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I knew Casey pretty well, and I didn't know what to say to the guy, you know. So I said, hey, Casey, how you doing? So he looks at me, he says, yeah, I know I look like shit. He goes, he says, my only excuse is I went through still another divorce. He says, I only trained for like a month for this show. I said, well, maybe you shouldn't have entered. He says, you're right, I should. He's laughing.
For a month? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, you know, all the other guys training all year, he trained a month. You know, but he had a very self-deprecating humor. He took the whole thing in stride. You know, he figures, hey, you know what? I made my mark in bodybuilding, youngest Mr. America. So I have nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
He's right, you know. I mean,
did you see that video? I think it just was released a couple, maybe a week or so ago. I just saw it for the first time today. It was from the prejudging of the '94 Masters Olympia, and it had Robbie, Lou, and Lawyer Co. So it had like posing down against each other, like in the mandatory poses.
I didn't see the video, but I was at the show. I was there.
Yeah, I'll send it to you. I'll email it to you.
Okay.
It's like a little couple minutes, but it was great. You got to see all three of them do their posing routines.
Yeah.
Robbie looked amazing at that show, man.
Oh, yeah. He looked great. Yeah.
Boyer looked good, too.
Boyer did look good. It's true. Yeah.
He came out and hit that front double bicep. The whole crowd went, whoa!
Oh, Boyer always had those great arms, man.
That bicep.
Looked like he had a bicep on top of a bicep.
Yeah. I think he went like this at first, and then he did the bicep, you know. But, man, his arms looked fantastic.
It really was. I know. Yeah.
We should have you on with Boyer one day. Do like a double interview.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
He's a great interviewer. He's real personable, you know?
Yeah, I know.
He told me he wants to move out of California.
He wants to move out of California?
Yeah, because of all the, you know, stuff that's going on out there. They're shutting everything down and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Where does he want to go? Back south? Back to the south?
He's thinking Louisiana, Texas, or Florida.
Okay, yeah.
Like next year he wants to move.
He's from Louisiana, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, he's from Louisiana, yeah.
I told you, I went to the gym that he trained at when he was upcoming by Lloyd Larrell's gym in Lafayette,
yeah,
Louisiana.
Yeah.
I was there. I did a seminar down there with Robbie and Samir one year, years ago. Mm-hmm. And I trained in that gym. And, great gym.
I heard. Yeah.
Gym. And I met Lloyd Larrell, who was a 1916 Mr. America. Very nice guy. Also, one of these no-nonsense guys, you could tell. But I remember that, like, the whole town, John, trained at that gym. I mean, it was like the center place. You had housewives and businessmen.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, amazing, you know. And I remember I was working out there with Robbie one day. As we were leaving, they had a bulletin board, and they had these photos of homes for rent, right? And it was like the bio country, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this photo. It was like an old-style plantation mansion. It had something like 12 rooms or something like that. Huge yard, you know? And I'm looking at the cost of a monthly rent. I don't know if there's a lease or rent. I'm looking, and I'm rubbing my eyes. I said, Robbie, come over here and take a look, because I think I'm seeing things. He says, what is it? I said, what is the price of this the monthly rent of this place? And he looks. He says, $500 a month. I said, Robbie, I'm in California, one bedroom, and I'm spending $600 a month. This is 12-room mansion. And it's, what the hell is wrong with this picture? And he laughed. We both laughed, you know?
Wow.
That's how much cheaper it was to live down there, you know?
Yeah. In the swamp.
The swamp was right there. The bio was right there, you know? I remember telling somebody I wanted to take a walk at night. They said, well, don't go close to the bio. There's alligators.
Yeah.
I laughed. I thought it was a joke. And the guy's looking at me poker face. He said, oh, I'm serious. There's alligators down there. I'm not going then.
Yeah, between the alligators and the snakes, man.
Forget it, man. No way.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thank you to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for continuing to sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends podcast every week. And also thank you to all you Patreon donors who are generously donating money every month to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. If you guys want to help the show and donate money through Patreon, you can do that on the website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com. And in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link for Patreon. All right. Without further ado, I do want to read this article real quick, which was sent to us by our friend Pat Comer. And this is about Chris Dickerson winning the 1970 Mr. America. And it was actually written by Perry Rader himself, who owned Iron Man magazine back then. And it says, Dickerson wins Mr. America. The audience waited with bated breath as the final award was made at the big meet in the beautiful Veterans Memorial Auditorium the evening of June 14th. For this is the final award would be made for the new Mr. America. Competition had been rough, but several men were standouts. There was St. John, who looked great, and then Casey Viator, who had made amazing improvements since last year. And then we had such men as Darden, Morris, Grant, Amato, and many others who had placed high in previous contests. But most of the audience seemed to think that the title would be given to either Chris Dickerson, a close runner-up to Coe last year, or Ken Waller, who had been improving and looked great. Both had their followers, but everyone knew that it would be very close and either man could win without anyone thinking that the wrong man had won. Bill Pearl, who has won just about all the titles there is to win, was doing the emceeing and began to call out the place winners, starting with fifth place man, who was Charles Amato. We don't know when we have seen a man with more cuts or definition than this man, coupled with great size and shape, as well as excellent posing ability. This man will go places if he will stay with it. Then they called out Bill St. John, who looked improved over last year and has even better abdominals than ever. And the best he could do on abdominals was third place. This shows you how stiff the competition was. In third place, a surprised and very happy Casey Viator, a young fellow who has become huge without sacrificing shape and definition. a future Mr. America if he trains right and keeps trying. Now, the next announcement would tell the final story, for it would bring out second place man. Bill waited for a moment and then called out Ken Waller. We know that Ken was disappointed, and understandably so, as he has a magnificent physique, but this just didn't seem to be his year. All seven judges had placed Waller below Dickerson, although one judge gave first place to Viator. When Chris Dickerson was called out, he was about as happy as anyone could be, and he asked to say a few words on the mic, where he explained that this win was proof that anyone, regardless of race, color, creed, or background, could climb to the top if he just believed he could and would just stay in there and fight. It vindicated his faith in America and the opportunities for everyone who will try to keep trying. On another page, you'll see how the judges voted. We would like to see the decision made in the places rather than points. Again, in another contest recently, we saw a man win a title on points that should have won because he got more first places. Other than this, we believe the new system is working out very well. It'll be presented for approval of the AAU at the annual convention in San Francisco in December. The lighting was really great for this contest and was prepared by an old-timer of the game and perhaps the greatest physique photographer America ever produced, Al Urban. Al should be given credit for a great job, and if you want the finest lights for your contest, you would do well to observe this arrangement. There was two overhead lights, which of course had to be properly positioned, but what really gave it that extra something was the two backlights on the floor about 3 feet back of the posing platform, giving a new outline to the legs without distracting from the front lighting. This lighting brought out the best in every physique. The photography of this meet will not be the best from any of the photographers, since all of them had to sit off to one side and they could not get direct frontal shots, which would have been best. We will not go into quite much detail about the men as usual, as we've covered most of them in the past years, but a few remarks about each will be in order. Charles Kallras was the first to appear on the posing platform. Here is a fellow with a very unusual physique that is exceptionally well cut up and with as great a definition as anyone in the meet. He is 38 and has been training for 18 years. All right. Unfortunately, that's all I got of the article. Pat did not send me the rest of it, but maybe he can send that to us next week. But we do have some really great pictures here. Let's see, the first one was of Chris Dickerson. It says, Chris Dickerson, after many years of trying, has won the coveted Mr. America contest with this marvelous physique. His personality, his posing ability, and physical perfection were tops. And that was a swan photo. And then they have a great photo of Ken Waller. It says, Ken has been pushing for the top title for several years and looks better each time. And if he should persist, he certainly can't miss eventually winning it with this superb physique. It is huge and shapely. He has the height and an imposing performance. And that was a John Balick photo. And Ken has actually cross striations on his quads. And this is 1970, so unbelievable photo. And the one with Chris, he's got like vascularity throughout his legs, including his thighs and his calves. So this guy's had really, really great physiques. This is 50 years ago. So hopefully Pat will send me the rest of that article and I could maybe read it next week. And he also sent me an article from the 1970 World Weightlifting Championships. And this was pretty unusual because this was the Mr. World contest where Arnold just beat Sergio that we just talked about with Jerry Branum. It says 1970 World Weightlifting Championships, Mr. World contest, September 12th through the 20th in Columbus, Ohio. And it says the 1970 World Weightlifting Championships will be held in Columbus, Ohio from September 12th through 20th, 1970. This will mark the first time in over 20 years that these world championships have been held in the United States. Entries from 35 nations are expected. Outstanding competition is expected in all weight classes, with national and international interest being focused on the U.S. versus Soviet Union combat in the two top weight classes. One weight class is scheduled for each of the 9 days of competition, proceeding from the lightest to the heaviest classes. A Mr. World physique contest has been scheduled for Saturday evening, September 19th, following the 242-pound class. Competition will be held at two sites in Columbus, Ohio. Ohio State University's Mershon Auditorium will be the site of the afternoon and evening sessions from Saturday, September 12th through Friday, September 18th. The last 2 days of competition, which include the two heaviest weight divisions, will be staged at Veterans Memorial Auditorium in downtown Columbus. Tickets for the entire 9 days of the competition, including the Mr. World, are now on sale for $15. These all-session tickets entitle the holder to preferred seating in the orchestra, but no specific reserve seats will be assigned. Daily tickets good for afternoon and evening sessions each day may be obtained for $3. All may be obtained from the Mershon Ticket Office at Ohio State University, 30 West 15th Street, Columbus, Ohio. Checks should be made payable to the Ohio State University. It is hoped that all weightlifting and bodybuilding enthusiasts will make plans to attend these world championships. It represents for us in the United States a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And then it says, Mr. World Contest, Saturday, September 19th, two height classes, all up to 5'8 and over 5'8, first, second, and third place trophies and overall trophy, the largest and finest trophies ever given. 3 days room and board will be given to all physique contestants. There will be TV coverage by Wide World of Sports. For information, entry blanks, etc., contact Kurt Haywood, 9375 East Broad Street in Pataskala, Ohio. We hear there will be a professional contest, but we have no other information on this. Wow, that's interesting. So, of course, at this World Weightlifting Championships, this is where Vasily Alexeyev, the very legendary weightlifter from Russia, he broke the record of 500 pounds overhead. That took place on that Saturday. But I believe it says the Mr. World Contest will be Saturday. I think that was on Sunday because they had to wait for Arnold and Dave Draper and Franco and Boyer Coe to come from London, and they left on Sunday morning because that contest was held on Saturday. So I believe that Mr. World Contest was held on Sunday, and that, of course, was filmed by ABC Wide World of Sports. So that was a very, very historic event. Crazy reading that article. It was held all week. I didn't know that. And it was only $15 to go to the whole event for the whole week. So that was unbelievable. And of course, as we just mentioned with our interview with Jerry, that is the contest where Arnold beat Sergio for the first time. And it's also the contest where Arnold met the promoter, who was Jim Lorimer, and they started their 50-year friendship and business partnership, which has resulted in the Arnold Classic being held all over the world. So amazing history there. So thank you to Pat Comer for sending me that article. If you send the rest of the article, Pat, I will read the rest of it maybe next week on the show. All right, that is it for our show. We will see you guys next week. Me and Jerry will be back to talk about the year 1980, which was 40 years ago. And, of course, we're going to talk about the 1980 Mr. Olympia, as well as the 1980 Mr. America, which was won by Gary Leonard, the 1980 Mr. Universe, and whatever other big events were took place in 1980, including many of the professional Grand Prix events that were all won by Chris Dickerson. I think he won most of them that year. So that'll be next week on the Bodybuilding Legends Show. Thank you guys for joining us. Enjoy your workouts. I know I'm going to enjoy my workouts getting back to the gym, and have a happy new year this week. See you guys next week in 2021. Take care.